So healing is one of the major themes we see throughout Jesus' ministry. I counted up at least 24 specific stories of healings that are shared in the Gospels, along with another five times that we're told simply that Jesus was healing among the crowds. So we know that he healed at least 11 lepers, at least five blind men, four lame people, four people with demons. He brought three dead people back to life, including in our story for today. He performs a lot of other healings also, including curing a serious fever and a hemorrhage and a withered hand and hearing loss. And the people who receive Jesus' healing represent a broad spectrum of society. Also, there are men and women, boys and girls. You know, some are Jews, some are Samaritans. There's at least one Roman and one Syrophoenician. A lot of them are common folk, even slaves, but some are members of prominent families. And all of that just really scratches the surface of all of the healing that Jesus does in his ministry. So our text for this morning contains two of those stories of healing. And these narratives include some very clear parallels between the two, as well as some significant differences. And taken together, they provide, I think, a valuable insight into what Jesus' ministry is all about. So in the first story, we find Jesus in the village of Capernaum. And he's approached by some Jewish elders on behalf of a centurion, a soldier in the Roman army. Now this is remarkable, because most Jews deeply resent the Roman occupation of this land, a land that God had promised to them. And the rulers that Caesar appoints, they're often cruel and corrupt, and they ignore Jewish customs, they embezzle from the temple treasury, they kill a lot of Jews. And yet the leaders of Capernaum look upon this centurion with respect. Even though he's a representative of the despised occupation, he has shown compassion to them. He's even helped build their synagogue, and so they intervene on behalf of him for the healing of his servant. So Jesus is on his way to the centurion's home when he then encounters another group of representatives from the soldier, and they tell Jesus that he doesn't need to bother coming to their house. As one who's accustomed to working within a chain of command, the officer is confident that all Jesus has to do is to issue an order, and it'll be followed, and his slave will be healed. Jesus is amazed by this, and he tells the crowd, he says, "I tell you, even in Israel, I have not found faith like this." This soldier, this non-Jew, this representative and enforcer of an enemy occupation is held up as a shining example of true faith. That's a challenging story. Jesus reaches out, crossing all sorts of boundaries to minister to somebody who is the enemy of his people, the enemy of God's people. What's more, Jesus does not ask the centurion to leave his position as an official within that system that is oppressive to the people. Now, centurion is a relatively low-ranking officer. A lot of commentators will say, well, it's roughly equivalent to a junior officer in the military, say an army captain today. And so he's not somebody who's able to affect any large-scale change in policy toward those who are under occupation, and yet Jesus never chastises him for taking a part in this corrupt, this oppressive system. He never advises him to leave his position. He never counsels him to change any behavior in any way. He just reaches out to him and he ministers to him as one who has a need. In performing this healing, Jesus is demonstrating what he challenges his followers to do in the Sermon on the Plain, which is actually right before our text for this morning. And there he says things like, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, give to everyone who asks of you, don't demand your things back from those who take them, treat people in the same way that you want them to treat you. And if you do good to those who do good to you, why should you be commended? Even sinners do that. Be compassionate, just as your Father is compassionate. Well, after healing the centurion's servant, Jesus moves on, leaves Capernaum, and we next encounter him about 30 miles away in another Galilean village, Nain. And as this second story opens, Jesus and the disciples encounter this funeral procession just outside the city gates. And Jesus has compassion here on the dead man's widowed mother. He stops to comfort her, and then he reaches over and he commands the dead person to sit up. And he does. He not only sits up, he starts to talk, which shows obviously this man is now alive. The crowd is amazed, and they're convinced that the one who has done this incredible thing is a prophet sent by God. Now, one of the things that likely amazes the crowd that we might miss in reading this is that Jesus is actually violating the law here. Numbers 19, we read, "The person who touches the dead body of any human will be unclean for 7 days. That person must be cleansed with water on the third and the seventh day to be clean. Anyone who touches the body of a human who has died and doesn't cleanse himself defiles the Lord's dwelling. Such persons must be cut off from Israel." And then the law goes on and explains that it applies not only to touching the person directly, but also touching anything that the dead person has also touched. And so even though we're told that Jesus touches the stretcher on which the dead man is being carried, he still would have to go through this whole purification process in order for him to continue on in his ministry. But that's a risk that Jesus is willing to take. He's willing to violate the purity laws in order to serve a higher law. A law that calls on caring for the fatherless children and widows. Because they have no fathers, no husbands in this patriarchal society, the law of Moses has a lot of provisions for widows and orphans to be supported. So they're to receive a share of a special tithe that's given every 3 years, a portion of every field, every olive tree, every vineyard is to be left unharvested so that they can glean some of the produce. They're given a special place in the celebration of several major festivals as well. And then the prophets of Israel repeatedly call on leaders to guarantee justice to these widows and orphans. And Jesus is so standing firmly in that prophetic line as he touches this dead body in order to bring healing to this fatherless young man and by extension to his widowed mother as well. Now keep in mind, Jesus has just proven that he doesn't actually have to touch somebody to heal them, right? He never even entered the house to heal the servant of the centurion, and yet he goes out of his way to reach out and place his hand on the stretcher, challenging the purification laws. Now, if you're here last week, you heard Emily Kiefer talk very well about another incident where Jesus violates the law to bring about healing. She spoke of how Jesus transgresses the Sabbath law in order to embody the higher intent that lies behind the law, and a lot of what she said really applies to this story as well. She noted that Jesus shows us a dynamic, compassionate way forward, a way of engaging the world that combines a deep knowledge of the intent of the law and a deep engagement with reality and human beings as they are. Jesus chooses to restore a human being, even if it means breaking the Mosaic law. Jesus reveals a God who is fundamentally concerned with the restoration of human beings rather than purity. So as I said, there are a lot of parallels between these two stories of healing. In both of them, Jesus brings healing to a person in need. In both of them, Jesus crosses social boundaries. He violates taboos in order to bring that healing about. But there's some very important differences here too. And in particular, the social and economic status of those who benefit from the healing are very different from one another. The centurion is a Gentile man, the widow, a Jewish woman. The centurion is in a position of power, able to make people follow his commands. The woman is powerless, dependent upon others to support her. The centurion is a charitable person, having given generously to the community. The widow is reliant upon charity in order for her survival. So in many ways, these two could hardly be more unlike. True, they are both outside the mainstream of Jewish society, but they represent, if you will, the opposite banks of that stream. And they would likely never encounter one another in regular social settings. And yet Jesus reaches out to both of them. He welcomes the foreigner as well as the native. He has compassion on the financially secure Roman as well as the economically vulnerable Galilean. He affirms the military officer as well as the common peasant, because in the kingdom that Jesus establishes, everyone's invited, Jew and Gentile, rich and poor, man and woman, insider and outsider. Jesus erases all of those social boundaries that separate people based on politics, on nationality, on gender, on economics, on ability, and any other categories we might want to name. Everyone has a place at God's table, including you and me. And though we may not like to admit it, we, most of us at least, have a lot more in common with that centurion than we do with the widow. Most of us are Gentiles. Most of us are economically secure. Most of us are citizens of a powerful empire who enjoy the benefits of living within a military superpower. All of us are part of God's kingdom only because Jesus reaches out across boundaries to welcome us into his kingdom. That is a valuable lesson and one that we need to remember, especially in times such as these when people are drawing so many lines to separate us. Immigrants are being rounded up for deportations. Refugees who had been approved to come to the country are now being kept out. Transgender persons being stripped of their rights. Terms like inclusion and equity have become suspect, being scrubbed from official websites and policies. Vital aid to nations all around the world is being withheld. And when a Christian leader dared to speak from her own pulpit a few weeks ago, calling on newly installed officials to show compassion and mercy, she was widely criticized. In fact, there is actually a resolution in Congress right now, supported by 23 representatives, asking Congress to condemn her for what they claim is her distorted message. But based on our text for today and a lot of other texts, it seems quite clear to me that compassion and mercy are not distortions of the gospel message. No, mercy and compassion are central to what the gospel is all about, to everything that Jesus says and does and is. And so in this context, it is vital that we continue to proclaim and embody Jesus' mission of healing and compassion to the many who are being targeted by a lot of current government policies. Now, based on the ministries that we support as a congregation, the welcome statement we adopted last year, conversations I've had with many of you over the last 6 years or so now, I'm guessing that many of us are on board with this idea of supporting those who are targets of current government policies. And yet, even as I affirm righteous indignation in the face of systems that act against refugees and immigrants and transgender people and many others, I am reminded that Jesus brought healing to the centurion's household also. He held up the Roman soldier as a model of faith. He confirmed the value and humanity of the person who acts as a part of the oppressive state. Now, a lot of commentators will point out that this centurion, this official, well, he's different. He's shown love to the Jewish people. He built them a synagogue. He demonstrates humility in asking Jesus to come to his house rather than just commanding him to do so. He's one of the good ones. And there's truth in a lot of this, but But ultimately, Jesus does not bring healing to the centurion's household because he deserves it. The centurion doesn't have to earn Jesus' compassion any more than any of us need to. Throughout Luke, we repeatedly find Jesus reaching out to those who work for the Roman government. Now, Luke is the only Gentile who is credited with writing any part of the Bible. And he consistently emphasizes ways in which Jesus compassionately responds to those who are serving the occupying power. Our story today, the centurion's servant, the parable where one who collects taxes for the Romans is a hero, Jesus' visit to the tax collector Zacchaeus, the healing of the ear of the slave who's part of the mob that comes to arrest him, his words from the cross, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing," all of them are recorded only in the Gospel of Luke. And this compassion towards government officials continues in Luke's second volume. In the book of Acts, we read about Philip's interchange with the Ethiopian eunuch in Acts 8, and Peter's encounter with another centurion, Cornelius, in Acts 10. Now, I'm not suggesting that Jesus blesses all the things these officials do. He doesn't approve of the often oppressive system in which they serve. And remember, this is the same Jesus we just read a few weeks ago, his inaugural address in Nazareth, where he says, "The Lord has anointed me, sent me to preach good news to the poor, to proclaim release to the prisoners, recovery of sight to the blind, to liberate the oppressed." But as we see in our story this morning, even as Jesus carries on this ministry of liberation, he is able to separate who the centurion is as a person from the sometimes brutal acts in which the Roman army in which he serves is involved. And the challenge we face is to try and do the same. That is a very delicate balancing act, to follow Jesus' path. It means advocating for the immigrant while also showing compassion to the ICE agent. It means standing up for the transgender person while also extending mercy to the legislator trying to enact laws restricting their rights. It means seeking justice for the Palestinian while demonstrating love for the Israeli soldier. It means working to restore funds promised in foreign aid while also affirming the humanity even of those powerful billionaires trying to cut it. That's not an easy task. It is not easy to love your enemies. It is not easy to try to do good to those who hurt you and those whom you love. It is not easy to try to treat others as human beings made in God's image when they represent a system that oppresses and dehumanizes so many. This sort of compassionate action takes prayer, it takes humility. It takes the presence and the power of the Holy Spirit. But in the end, Jesus welcomes the widow as well as the centurion. He welcomes the sinful woman who anoints his feet as well as Zacchaeus. He welcomes the lepers who beg for mercy as well as the one who is injured while arresting him. He truly welcomes everyone, including every one of us. And so we also are invited to welcome everyone as we live out our calling to be a worshiping community rooted in God's love, following Jesus, seeking peace and justice, and serving others.